Anyhow, getting back to practical decisions. So I take it that if you see a patient with BRAF positive metastatic disease in the first line, and they say to you, what's the strategy that's going to keep most likely have me alive and well in 5 years, you're going to say, kind of, it's a coin flip?
Right, it is. And I tell them further, this is the low disease burden patient, and you know, I tell them further, I'm going to watch you like a hawk through the first few months of therapy. And I'm going to do scans, you know, at least every 2 months, because how you respond, going back to complete responders doing well and less than complete response not doing well, is very much going to influence my thinking about how long we stick with treatment choice number one. Basically, you know, I don't want to wait around and get burned by the acquisition of resistance over time in a patient who's having a really suboptimal response to either approach. This is, I think, a key point about the long-term follow-up data, is that the progressors are coming from, you know, those who had a middle-of-the-road partial response, but where there's still definitely disease burden remaining. The high disease burden patient you asked about a while ago, and we didn't talk much about them, but you know, unfortunately, these are the patients who just don't get long-term benefit with any, you know, reliability to either targeted therapy or immunotherapy. So the patients who walk in the door with symptoms, and then you measure a serum LDH and it's elevated or particularly markedly elevated, like more than 2 times upper limit of normal, if you look at the data from these, you know, long-term follow-up analyses, they are just not in the running for, you know, a more than 2 year survival outcome. So, you know, if they have a BRAF mutation, sure, we think about BRAF inhibitors for their ability to induce, you know, disease control, symptom benefit, and so on. And it's not that immune therapies can never have an early effect in those patients. They can, but long-term benefit is just unfortunately exceedingly unlikely. And that's true even with PD-1 CTLA-4 combination, which I'll tell you is, if there's a population in whom that approach is favored, it's those high disease burden patients. So if you have a patient in front of you who doesn't have a BRAF mutation and you're purely weighing PD-1 monotherapy versus PD-1 CTLA-4 combo, if they have high disease burden, that is oftentimes the driver of telling them, look, you know, there's more toxicity associated with this regimen, but we're not going to have the benefit of being able to get you through 2 lines of therapy. If we're going to go for it, we're going to go for it up front with both drugs.
That's really interesting. Roughly globally in clinical practice, I don't know, maybe there have been surveys done about what fraction of patients' first-line metastatic disease fit into this high tumor burden.
So there are survey data. I think they do vary between the referral centers who always see, you know, kind of a selected set versus community practice. In our practice, I would say, you know, no fewer than 30% of patients meet the definition I'm describing of high disease burden at baseline. You can look at some survey data and talk to community docs, and they'll tell you it's probably closer to 50% of patients who walk in the door by the same rough measures they'd classify as high burden. So it's a non-trivial thing. And remember, in melanoma, you know, before we had these drugs 8 years ago, you know, the average survival time was 6 to 8 months, even in clinical trial populations, right? So this is an overall aggressive disease, and if patients walk in the door with symptoms and elevations of LDH. To me, it's amazing that we actually can get a benefit of even 1 or 2 years duration with the available treatments, but these are not the long-term surviving patients.